Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Tuesday, December the 20th. Once again, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. A lot to get into with Bill, as always. We've got Title 42 and the border issues. What's going to happen with the January 6th committee? Who's going to be the next speaker? And what in the world is going on with the FBI and Twitter? It seems to get more interesting every week. So let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Merry Christmas, Bill. How is everything in New York?
Merry Christmas to you, Silvio, and to your family. In New York, well, actually, not very good. The weather seems nice. I won't brave anything, under 40 degrees. So I'm inside, but the city of New York is not in very good shape right now. The mayor is warning that if this Title 42 rule that has been in effect at the border is canceled, as is predicted it will be, that New York will be flooded with new immigrants and does not have the facilities, and that the new immigrants must be given priority. I don't know why that is. But the new immigrants must be given priority, and he is asking for help. He's not getting very much help. I think that the mayor finally realizes that his own party is against him. He sees this as a crisis for New York, for not being able to house people, to not being able to take care of them. But apparently the governor of New York, who was just elected for some god-awful reason, is shrugging. The state legislature is shrugging. They don't see this as an emergency at all. They rather welcome it. And that is our situation here. I wish we had a press that was as worthy as the city, but New York City is about to be inundated with illegal immigrants who have no jobs, who have no housing. You can be sure that any housing that will be acquired for them in New York by the city will be exorbitantly expensive. And I do think you're going to begin to see the beginning of a very, very substantial period of resentment. I mean, it's true that the wealthy liberals in New York never express any resentment toward anything because they can get out if they want to. But to the ordinary citizen, I think finally maybe they're beginning to wake up to what is happening. Our cities are being used as dumping grounds for illegal immigrants, and maybe look, they're human beings, we feel sorry for them and all the rest, but there's no plan, there is no real assistance, and I think there is probably in the near future going to be genuine fear that they're going to take jobs away from citizens who are already here.
Right.
And Not a good situation. Not a good situation at all. And now we see that the President of the United States, who I believe is Joe Biden, at least today, is now going to fly to Mexico to meet with the President of Mexico about this. And isn't it a little late? I mean, you know, Mexico's been there a long time, and the situation is desperate. So there was a very interesting feature on last night on one of the television networks about El Paso. El Paso at one time was a beautiful city, and it was a mostly Hispanic city, very peaceful, considered a very good place to live, good schools, and now it's a wreck,
right?
Because it opens right on the border, and they cannot handle this load. This is a national crisis. It is not being reported as a national crisis by our press, which I think increasingly is failing the country to do its job. But there doesn't seem to be any real solution in sight.
No, and what's happening at El Paso, of course, and you're right, El Paso, I'm quite familiar with El Paso because I did a lot of business there, as well as on the other side of El Paso, which is Ciudad Juarez, Mexico. That was always, in many ways, almost like a model city for a border town, because you had two cities that were almost like sister cities in many ways. There are many family members. I mean, it was not at all unusual for a family in Juarez to travel to El Paso to celebrate a birthday or vice versa. It was really two cities in one, in a sense, just divided by an international border, but certainly no hostility or any problems for a long time in that city. But now it's a mess. It's a mess. It's just a complete mess. As you say, they cannot handle the people. I've had some experience here talking to some of these individuals here in the last few weeks, and because some of them are being flown to Dallas, and then from Dallas they're sent somewhere else. And I was talking to a couple of them. They're from Venezuela. And I asked them, what are you going to do? I mean, are you going to be able to work? He says, well, no, we cannot work. So how are you going to be supported? I mean, who's going to help you pay the rent? Who's going to, you know, get you a job? They don't know, Bill. They don't have a clue.
Yes.
It's like,
yes,
in many cases, Bill, they're almost feeling like, and this is where I think this story could really break up and blow up in the face of the Biden administration. Many of these people are beginning to feel that they're being used, and they're wondering why they came in the first place. I mean, nobody
yes.
told them they were going to have to wait 2 years to see a judge or something like that.
Yes.
So the whole thing is it's a mess, and I, for the life of me, I cannot understand the lack of urgency here. You've got, I was reading a little bit about Title 42 today, and Title 42 apparently goes back 100 years or something like Title 42, and it was to prevent, it was a health care, a health, I guess, a health safety or whatever you call it type of title. And the idea was for it to be exercised in times of a healthcare crisis. Well, COVID was a healthcare crisis, to say the least. It was implemented by President Trump. And now you have this incredible situation where it seems like this is going from judge to judge. You know, one judge says one thing, the other judge says another. Now you've got Justice Roberts, I guess, killing it for the time being. But, Bill, I don't understand. I'd like to get your reaction to this, but I do not understand how much more judges can do. I mean, this is an executive action. This is not something that judges can do forever. At some point, this has to go back to the White House, and the White House to say, we're either going to do it or we're not going to do it. But you cannot go from judge to judge, Bill.
That's right. And we have a vice president who presumably is the czar of the border. I don't think she's ever visited the border. I mean, she doesn't even seem to be interested in her job. You know, what this is, it's in my view anyway, this is part of an overall plan. Maybe it's an informal plan by the Democratic Party to basically buy elections. All these immigrants are going to come in. They're going to be taken care of eventually by Democratic mayors. The money will show up somewhere. And they will be beholden to the Democratic Party. You have the same thing going on in California now. There was a very interesting interpretation a few days ago by a writer about why reparations have become such a hot issue in California. And that is that the so-called black vote is beginning to drift away from the Democratic Party. But they hope that reparations will bring them back to the Democratic Party. Basically, it's a vote-buying scheme. It's to buy populations. And if there's another population that comes through and getting wobbly, they'll find something in history to justify reparations for them, too. This is not a truly noble cause. It is a cause basically based on the fact that the Democratic Party has become less of a political party than a business.
Mm-hmm.
And it is.
That's
it's being
right.
run as a business.
Right. What I found interesting, though, is, and again, I'm not, my conversations with a couple of these people are just, you know, anecdotal. I mean, I don't have any scientific survey. But I, the two Venezuelans that I was talking to, I asked them, well, how do you, you know, how do the Venezuelans feel about the Biden administration? And they were not happy with the Biden administration because they were saying, look, you know, you've got the Biden administration helping Maduro over here with oil, with an oil business. And
yes,
that's keeping him in power, which is driving us to the United States. So I, the whole thing is a mess, and it's just – it lacks leadership. I mean, it, you know, people used to criticize President Trump, and I get that. But President Trump was a solution guy. You know, he came from the
yes.
business community where in the business community you cannot continue to punt the ball forever. At some point you have to say, we have to make a decision. And that's the world that he comes from. And that's what he did on the border with Title 42, with Remain in Mexico. And people say that, you know, those were not perfect. Nothing is perfect. But I'd rather have the Trump border policy right now than the Biden border policy. I think there's no question that the country, both sides of the border, I should say, Bill, were better served by whatever President Trump was doing, Bill.
You know, this is the tragedy of Donald Trump. He had excellent policies. He developed excellent policies, very, as you said, very practical policies that actually worked. But unfortunately, as a man, he kind of lost the support of the American people in a way very much like Nixon did. I think it's kind of a Nixon gene going around. Nixon was a very, very capable man and very knowledgeable. But he had a side to him that he just couldn't control. I think the same is true of Trump. But when you look back, the country was far better off under Donald Trump than under the Biden administration. And I've seen some games being played. I've heard some games being played by political associates. They're now beginning to talk about the following things. Well, what happens if Joe Biden can't make it to the 2024 election? What happens if he's medically forced out or if something worse happens? Well, then Kamala Harris becomes president. And the question that is being widely asked, you're going to hear the murmur pretty soon when, once the new year begins, is who would she pick as vice president? Because a new president in that situation would have to name a vice president subject to the consent of both houses of Congress. That could be the political question of the next decade.
Right.
Because it may very well happen. This man is not in good shape. I mean, he's talking about running a 2024 campaign for an election that's 2 years away. I mean, by any standard in any nation, he would be retiring.
Right.
I don't know why, but we have the institutional failures going on in America right now, and the greatest institutional failures are the universities and the press. And these are two institutions that are critical to the political future of the country. The press doesn't even – you watch CNN and you wonder what world they're living in. They're still living in the world of January 6th,
as if anybody
actually cares.
Right.
Or they're going to have a criminal referral of Trump to the Justice Department, and does the Justice Department care? Well, maybe it does. But you turn to other networks, they're reporting other things. They are not necessarily reporting the whole story. One of the biggest stories in the world today is Iran and the revolution in Iran and the fact that they can't seem to control it. And it's a revolution led by women. And yet you listen to the women's groups in America, there is not a word of interest.
Right.
I don't know what's happening to us as a country. We seem to be drifting from reality.
Right. Well, and speaking of women, I don't know if you saw the story. I just saw this about 10 minutes before we connected today, and that is that in Afghanistan, they've kind of gone full back to the old days. I mean, women are no longer going to be allowed to go to universities. I mean, it's like the good old days are back. You know, I thought this was supposed to be the reform wing of the whatever party they're called in Afghanistan, but it turns out that as soon as we got out, they went back to their old ways, which is I don't want to, you know, re-litigate Afghanistan, but that was exactly my fear, Bill, that we would get out the way we did, leaving no force behind, nothing behind, and that would open up the takeover of the country, and within a year and a half, we're back to the late 1990s again, Bill, when Afghanistan is nothing but a training school for terrorism. That's what I see coming, and the signs are all there, Bill.
Absolutely, and once again, the silence of the women's movement in the United States. Afghan women are going into a period of terrible oppression, not one word. I wish somebody would do that story, but I don't think they have the courage to do it because they may find out what the women's movement really is about. Mm-hmm. And that's more about Marxism than about women.
Right. But it's interesting, Bill, you mentioned the media. And if you look at the border, the failure of the media to address the border, look at the failure of the media to address what's happening in the streets of Iran, now what's happening in Afghanistan. Bill, you kind of get the feeling that this is conspiratorial maybe on my part, but you kind of get the feeling that they don't like stories that make Joe Biden look bad.
How else do you explain this, Bill? You're absolutely right. It is a new generation of journalists who do not believe in reporting news. They actually don't believe in it. They believe their job is to advance certain political views. Now, if they think that's their job, okay. I have no problem with that as long as they tell us they think it's their job. As long as they tell us, I'm not here really to give you the story, I'm here to influence the story. If they say that, fine, they're protected by the Constitution. But what we have, you see it in every poll, is a dramatic loss of respect for the press among the part of the American people. The people have lost confidence in their press. Fortunately, we have alternative means of communications through the Internet. The Internet was a gift of God, I think, to people seeking other means of getting information because the newspapers, the television networks really do not have the backing of the people. And you have to ask what will happen if this is a very, very serious crisis. Will they actually report the story? I'm not so sure they will. They are the today's generation of journalists is are the children of the 60s generation. The 60s generation really wasn't big stuff. I mean, everything they touched seemed to turn into motor oil. It just slipped right by us. And these are the children of the 60s, and they reflect those values. And those values are not very good if you're building a nation.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's frightening when. And the border, of course, we're close to the border, so the story here is we hear it all the time. And, of course, Governor Abbott has been very vocal about this. And now let's get back to the media again with Governor Abbott. ABC comes down here to interview the governor, and they ask him, well, you're the one who's talking about an open border, not President Biden. And, I mean, what kind of a ridiculous question is that, Bill?
Well, that was Martha Raddatz, who's a ridiculous person.
And I was surprised, if I may say this quickly, Bill. Martha Raddatz, at least my exposure, has always been a fairly responsible journalist. I mean, she may be a liberal. I don't care about that. She can be whatever she wants to be. But she's generally a responsible journalist. And this, you should have seen the governor's face if you saw the video.
Yes,
the governor is saying, where's this lady coming from? What planet is this lady coming from, Bill?
Well, that's the point. You listen to them and you wonder what country they're living in. I mean, one of the biggest stories in America today is the parents' revolt against education. You'd never know it listening to any of these. Fox has done a good job of reporting it. But, I mean, you would think that the so-called newspaper of record, the New York Times, which is here in New York and exists for some reason, a newspaper I used to work for, actually. But it is, I mean, they don't even mention it. We have had many ethnic attacks in New York in recent months against Jews. Not even a mention. Nothing. They live in their own world, their own universe, and they believe that their job is to create a better society. There was a publisher of the Times who I did not particularly care for, but he said one good thing in his career, Arthur Hayes Sulzberger, and he said, "We'll tell you which way the cat is jumping. It's your job, the public's job, to take care of the cat." That is a very good way of looking at what a good newspaper does. It gives you the situation, but it is your job as a citizen to take care of it. We no longer have that ethic in America. We really don't.
No, and now I guess if there is a silver lining to all of this, I was reading a column. I think it was by Bill O'Reilly, and he was looking at he was sharing some information about the audience numbers for some of these networks. I mean, if you look at the three major cable news, CNN is down like 30 or 40%. MSNBC,
yes,
a little bit better, but not much better. Fox is down 4%, which is, you know,
yes,
a little bit more manageable. But when you're down 30 or 40%, you do begin to wonder, and I've said this before many times, so I sound a bit like a broken record, but at what point do the guys in the accounting department drop by the newsroom and say, "Hey, guys, you're not making any money. I mean,
yeah,
we can't even support you anymore." I mean, I understand that they're supposed to be different and the news people are not supposed to be guided by profitable concerns. I get that. But they do have to pay the rent and they do have to pay the bills. And with the audience drops that they've had, I don't know how much longer they can do that, Bill.
Well, I am baffled by CNN because they have a new management that presumably set out to reform the company and to they got rid of Zucker, who had ruined it. These guys apparently wanted something more like a regular television news operation. But with the exception of their Ukraine reporting, which is very good, I mean, that's CNN at its best. But the domestic reporting is the same old stuff. Every second story is about Donald Trump. They should tell him, you know, they should show the reporters a calendar that he's not president anymore, that he lives somewhere else. He lives in Florida, a place called Florida, and that he is not really the big story in America right now. They seem to miss one thing after another. We went through an election. Yes, it is true. The Republicans did not do as well as they should have done. There are many reasons for it, and Donald Trump may very well be one of the reasons. But they didn't lose. They actually won the election, and they got 5 million more votes than the Democrats. But you would never know that.
Right.
You would just never know it. We have a fascinating, by the way, there's a fascinating story right here in New York. It's a sad story in a way, but one of the four new Republican congressmen from New York, who is going to represent part of Long Island, knocked over an old-time Democrat emerged kind of as a star. There are now questions about him, and they're serious questions. These are not minor questions about whether he made up almost all of his resume. Now, that said, it's sad for anyone in public life.
Right.
But I feel particularly bad because it's a new Republican congressman, and he claims to be Hispanic. He also claims to have worked for a number of companies, none of which can find any record of him. He claims to have gone to certain schools. The schools cannot find any record of him ever being there. There does not seem to be any record of him ever living in a South American country. He claims all kinds of things, and no one can find any record to back up what he's saying.
Wow.
Now, this is the kind of reporting that should have been done before the election.
Yes.
Not after the election, but it's become a major story here in New York because, without question, once he is sworn in, and he will be sworn in, he is the elected representative, but that will probably be referred immediately to the Ethics Committee.
Right.
And he could be in genuinely serious trouble. Now, what the issue here, of course, for us as citizens is that the lead the Republicans have in the Congress is only about 3 or 4 votes. Every single body counts. And if we lose one, because he may be forced to resign. I can't imagine how somebody who has made up everything, if you make up a few things, all right, people give you a little break. You know,
right.
That all right, he said, but this is a man who claims he has degrees that he doesn't have.
Yeah, that's pretty nasty.
That's pretty nasty, and they don't know where the money came from. It's one thing after another.
Mm-hmm.
So we're waiting now for some resolution. He has not made any statements. I imagine he has a good lawyer, but this can't go on. I mean, you can't have somebody like that in office.
No, and I think the point you made about the lead is so small. You lose one, potentially that seat could go back to the Democrats, and now all of a sudden the political gain that you made during the campaign is gone. So that's the problem. But you know, Bill, the only guy who can get away with talking about what school he went to and nobody can find any record of him is Obama. We know that.
And also Joe Biden.
Yeah, Joe Biden.
Makes up one story after another.
That's right.
I mean,
well,
now
that he married his Italian granddaughter, what was that one? His father-in-law was an Italian or something like that.
Yes.
Crazy story.
That's right, and he was an honor student at the Syracuse Law School when in fact he was at the bottom of the class,
right.
And he this and he's that, and he just makes up these stories. He also made up a story about, I think, his father being a war hero.
Yes,
what is
yes.
amazing is nobody stops him.
Right.
Hillary Clinton did the same thing. She said she was once landed in a war zone.
That's right.
Nobody could figure out which war zone this was. Remarkable.
Yes.
Just
now, it is. It is remarkable. But the one the other day about his grandfather or his father-in-law being Italian, or that he's Irish, but he's not stupid, stuff like that he says,
it's
just unbelievable to me.
That's
I mean,
right.
It's funny. It's funny on one hand. If he was a senator, I guess nobody would care. No, people would find it nutty if he was a senator, but he is the president of the United States. Bill, let me take a little break, and we'll come back. We got a lot more to get into with Bill. We want to talk a little bit about Speaker McCarthy. Or is he going to be the speaker? We'll talk about that in a second. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting today with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, the story about the congressman inventing that he had lived in a Hispanic country reminds me of a true story. I was talking one time to a candidate, and he said that he had lived in a Hispanic country. And I said, well, really, which one? And he goes, Brazil. And I said, well, okay, I'll give you credit for that, but the next time, just say that it was a Portuguese country.
That's right.
You know, I'll give you credit for the geography, but really, we don't really think of that one as a Hispanic country. It's more, maybe you can say Iberian. I'll give you credit for that.
Yes.
But Hispanic, Brazil, not... don't say that to the Brazilians, because they don't like speaking Spanish. You know, they're Portuguese. And that's what they are.
I found it interesting, and maybe you can explain this to me, that when Argentina won the soccer match, there really was not very much celebrating throughout Latin America. It was actually only in Argentina. And I didn't quite get that. I don't know.
You know, I'm sure there's some rivalry with Brazil. I mean, Brazil thinks, you know, and I think in many ways you could argue Brazil had a better team. I'm not an expert in soccer, but from what I read, sometimes the problem with these matches is that it ends up who you're playing against. And
yes.
Brazil had a tough match, I think, with the Netherlands or something, or France, whatever it was. So, you know, many people still think that Brazil is number one. So maybe that's where it comes from. And there's other countries down there. Uruguay always thinks of itself as a major soccer power. So there is a lot of rivalry. So it's a little bit like maybe the best way to understand it, or maybe you can understand this. If the Giants win the World Series, the Dodgers fans were not necessarily happy. You know, they were happy
that
the National League won, but they still didn't like the Giants, even after they beat the Yankees, Bill.
Well, yes. Well, you know, it's also very interesting that no matter how much they try, and no matter how much the networks try, soccer really has never made it as a major sport in the United
mm-hmm.
States.
No.
They're trying, no matter how much they try. We have the soccer moms. It's a good high school sport for kids.
Right.
But and I think the reasons are that it does not really match the American culture. You
right.
know, one of the reasons that football is so popular in America is it's a very fast game, a very high scoring game. Most people in this country don't want to wait around an hour and a half for somebody to score 1 point.
Right,
you know?
Or a penalty kick, or decide a championship.
Kick.
I mean, that's like deciding the seventh game of the World Series with a home run derby. I mean, like saying,
that's
okay,
right.
guys, we've played 12 innings. Check out your best six batters. I'll check out my best six, and let's see how many, who hits more balls over the fence or something
that's
like
right.
that. I mean, it's
that's
not,
right.
I don't, and it's the funny thing about it is I was talking to a friend from Argentina a couple of days ago. I called him to congratulate him on the victory, and I said, you know, I still don't like the penalty kicks, and he says, nobody does. So it's like soccer fans hate the penalty kicks, but I guess they're stuck with it. I wish they would find a different way. But there was a story
yes.
talking about soccer and the popularity in the United States. There was a lady, I forgot what network she was with, and she wrote this article saying that this was the greatest championship game in the history of sports. The France-Argentina game, it was a good game. I mean, it was exciting, 3-3, and these athletes are amazing, so I'll give them that. But the greatest game in the history of sports, I don't know. I can think of about a dozen baseball games that I thought were pretty exciting. Game 7, Bill.
Yeah, well, it's like we used to call, well, we still call it the World Series, and it was pointed out in the old days when I was growing up that the World Series championship was fought between Boston and St. Louis.
That's right.
And that's where it ended. And then there was nobody west of that. And they would call it the World Series. They still call it the World Series, not the
yes.
World Series. But
well,
I think they
call it the World Series. It was a marketing thing,
yeah,
I believe.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yes. I mean, because they wanted to give it a, you know, the idea that it's like the World Cup of baseball, I guess. That was the idea. But, of course, today, with roughly a third of the players being from Latin America, it's you know, you can argue that it's even from Japan, there are several players now.
That's
so
right,
it's a little
yes.
different than it was back then. But, yes, they tried to push soccer. And as I understand, it just doesn't fit. But, Bill, one thing I wanted to make, I made a note of this because when you were talking about that it doesn't fit American culture, it reminded me of something that Nolan Ryan, the great pitcher Nolan Ryan, Hall of Famer, who was president of the Texas Rangers here for a while. And one time he was talking about something called the sports calendar, that the sports calendar, that there's a budget for the sports calendar. You know, families have a sports calendar. They go in the summer, they go to baseball games. In the fall, they go to football games. And then they go to the indoor, basketball or hockey in the winter. And that if you look at the sports calendar, the family budget is pretty stretched out. So if you're talking now about bringing in another major league sport, where are you going to put it? You know, are you going to put
right.
it on Sunday afternoons in the summer? Well, that's baseball. Sunday afternoon
that's right.
in the fall, that's
no,
American
it's,
football.
It's
there's no,
exactly
no place
right.
for it. No place for it.
That's exactly right. It's a low-scoring game. Also, I mean, in America, knowing American mothers, if they went to a ball game and their son got hit in the head with a ball,
right.
they would call a lawyer. I mean, They wouldn't think it was part of the game. What do you mean my son is going to get hit in the head with a ball? I mean, right. And these boys that go out on the field, they never seem to talk to each other. Have you noticed? We have huddles. We have conferences on the mound. There's
right.
philosophy. There's history. I mean, these boys, I don't even think they know each other.
That's
I mean,
they may not
be much of a team. Yes.
No, but they may not, Bill, because if you're from Argentina, you never play with other people from your country because you're playing in Europe. That's one of the realities of South American soccer. Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Uruguay, the major players, all of their great stars play in Europe.
That's
so
right.
They don't get to see their players. My
right.
friend from Argentina said that that's what he likes about the World Cup. Because that's the only time that he sees people from his country actually playing together, because they're playing in Europe and they get to see him on television on Sundays. So, you know, it's – I don't know. I guess the next World Cup is going to be in the United States, so I'm sure we will hear a great deal about it. But, you know, I don't know.
It'll fade away.
It's a great sport with high school girls. Yes, it's
exactly
very popular.
Right. They're soccer moms. And then another thing, I wish they would stop, after they win a soccer match, I wish they would stop taking off their clothes.
That's
you know, I mean, can you imagine the New York Yankees ripping off their uniforms? I mean, or Tom Brady.
Right.
Throwing his
helmet. Well, I know. And if you remember the one time that the American women won the World Cup or something, one of the players did take off her jersey. And
yes,
that created
right.
quite a controversy, because obviously she was half naked, and that's
yes.
not something that the audience was used to. Bill, I got to bring this up. This is just a quick on this day in history, actually on this week in history. 50 years ago, Apollo 17 came back to the Earth after
yes.
a successful mission to the moon, and we have not been back since. And I remember Apollo 17. I remember that they were up there driving this little car, that is like a little vehicle that they were driving on mm-hmm. on the moon, and it was exciting to watch. But that was 50 years ago, half a century, and we have not been back to the moon. I would have never believed it 50 years ago, Bill.
No, I think that the fading away of the space program was one of the great sadnesses that we had. We didn't continue it. The public lost interest in it. There's no question about that. The movie The Right Stuff, which was a wonderful movie about the space program, came out in the early 80s, and they couldn't find an audience. They just could not find an audience. The young generation, the 60s generation kind of interrupted the space program in the sense that they weren't rooting for the United States anymore. And we
right.
did go to the moon with Apollo 17. And as you said, we haven't returned, and we're going to be going back to the moon. I hope there's some interest in it. I hope they can gin up some interest in it. I hope they don't report it the way they report all the other stories. Well, we now have a new mission to the moon, and we have the first left-handed lesbian who is going to be there. We'll be
right,
interviewing
right. That's right.
her and ask her what her pronouns are.
Right. That's right, yeah. Yeah, we're going to be sending this diversity crew. But I think
That's
if
right.
you really want the universities to get excited about the moon program, Bill, tell them that it has a connection to global warming.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They're, I'm sure that when they interview the astronauts who come back from the moon, they'll say, did you find evidence of global warming on the
That's
moon?
Right. That's right.
And by the way, I understand your great 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 grandfather owned slaves.
That's right. So you shouldn't go to the moon because of that. We got to find somebody who didn't do that horrible thing 800 years ago or whatever it was. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Oh yes.
But I just think it's sad, because I remember. You know, how much – maybe I was one of the ones who didn't lose interest in the lunar missions. But I remember watching, you know, whether it was in school or wherever it was, we always had a nice teacher who would let us watch the takeoff. You know, it was great. It was a great experience. And then, of course, everybody remembers what they were doing that Sunday afternoon in July 1969 when I was sitting there and watching the – you know, Neil Armstrong on the moon, and my mom and dad were telling each other, who can believe this? Who do, you know, they were both in a state of shock. They couldn't believe that man would be landing on the moon, because the only reference that they had about the moon was comics that my father said he would read as a young boy of Trips to the Moon, Bill.
Oh, that's right. We had, and we had a movie called Destination Moon.
That's right.
Early 1950s, which looking at it today, even the rocket looked ridiculous. But that was what we knew. And we had stories like Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, which
right.
was a radio program. So there was interest in kind of not scientific interest, but adventure interest, that someday we will go to the moon. I don't think anybody back in the early 50s thought it would happen in their lifetime, but of course it did.
Mm-hmm.
And we beat the Russians, which was part of the deal. I mean, that was part of the, you know, it was President Kennedy who said we will put a man on the moon in this decade and bring him back safely to Earth. And mm-hmm. it really was a race with the Russians. We won it handily. And that was kind of the end of it. After that happened, and the big New York Times headline, more, I still have the paper, by the way, the original, Man Walks on Moon.
Right.
And that was very exciting. But the excitement faded. There was nothing after the moon that we could do to beat it. To you know, we weren't ready to go to Mars or some other heavenly place. And there was a drop-off in public interest.
Right.
And that drop-off was sad, because I suspect that there were many young people who would have gone into the sciences had the interest continued. But
right,
now
but
maybe...
I was going to say, Bill, especially because of all the scientific achievements, I mean, all the things that we now have, I mean, the iPhone, the computer, everything that we now take for granted, we can trace back to NASA and those space missions. That's,
absolutely.
That's how we got all that technology to make it work so that we could go to the moon and back. So I miss it. Even though it's 50 years, I miss it. I wish we could go back to something like that. Somehow the shuttle taking off is just not as exciting, Bill.
No. And they, I don't know who is in charge of names, but the word shuttle doesn't exactly do it for me. You know, a shuttle is the little subway train you take between Times Square and Grand Central Station. Another one that always interested me, why would anybody name an airliner the Airbus?
Right.
I mean, you know, what's wrong with the French? I mean, at least Boeing calls it the Dreamliner. I mean,
Right. Okay,
that one I can understand. But the Airbus, do you really want to go on a bus, you know, at 30,000 feet? Names are important. They really are. I mean, they
right.
the names of the during the original program. The Gemini was one.
The one there were two, and then came Apollo. There were three men. Then Gemini was two. I thought Gemini was a great name.
Because
there was two of them. Before that, I don't remember what it was called, but I remember Gemini. And the first time they walked around the capsule, remember that? They walked in space? I remember that quite well, because I saw that in school.
I just thought of it. The first space program was the Mercury program.
Mercury.
Yes.
And that's the one that where John Glenn went up at a Mercury, right, I guess?
Yes. The first American to go mm-hmm. into space. We were theoretically losing the space race, which is why it became exciting and urgent, because the Russians put a man in space first, and then John Glenn followed. He was the first American to go into space. But the Russians always seemed to be slightly ahead, but we won the race to the moon.
Right.
But I'm excited about getting back into space. We haven't really been in space as a nation for years and years.
Right.
Obama ruined that. He made sure that we didn't make too much progress, you know.
That's right. Well, he wanted to have Yeah, he wanted to have a lot of diversity. Yeah.
Yes. So we were going to the space station. Most Americans don't know there is a space station.
Right.
And we go on Russian rockets. It's terrible.
Yes, I know. But I hope we bring it back, because that's one of the things that I remember most. And I was talking to my sons about this and explaining to them how exciting that was. to actually look forward to these things. It wasn't just a takeoff. You look forward to the mission, then you look forward to the splashdown somewhere in the Pacific, you know, when
That's
they
right.
would hit the ocean somewhere in the Pacific. Well, a couple of topics, Bill, that I want to get into here as we almost run out of time. A couple of big issues. One is, who's going to be the speaker? I suspect it's going to be McCarthy, but I hope the Republicans don't shoot themselves in the foot here
yes.
by trying mm-hmm. to get too cute with this, because McCarthy's got to hit the ground running. There's got a lot of work to do. And you know, I have no problem with McCarthy, frankly. I know some people say this or that, but give him the gavel, and let him be the speaker, Bill, and see what happens. But I think Republicans got to be careful they don't lose, you know, they win the election but lose the House.
Well, they could do that because they are, first of all, the Republican Party works very hard to lose. I mean, they work at it. It's an art form. But they now have at least a small lead in the House. They can maximize it. And the most important way to maximize it is to form the committees and get these investigations going, and where they subpoena the witnesses. But they're still stuck on this House, the Speaker business. There are five holdouts on the Republican side. It is conceivable that the Democrats will elect the Speaker, or that they'll have a compromise candidate between the parties. And remember, you don't have to be a member of the House
right.
of Representatives to be Speaker. I mean, my great nightmare is I'm going to look up there and see Oprah Winfrey.
That's
you know,
right.
I mean, Speaker Oprah.
Yes.
And if they mess up right at the beginning and they're a split party and they can't agree on a speaker or have a compromise candidate, they're going to look ridiculous.
They are,
they have
and
to
they're
be,
going to lose the voters who turned out, like you indicated before, five million more Republicans turned out. And they didn't turn out for this kind of chaos. They turned out because they wanted to see a House do its job, Bill. So I'm hoping that they can put this crap behind them. They've got a couple of weeks to do it, and hopefully they can do it. But, you know, we were joking a couple of weeks ago about Lee Zeldin. That would be my choice.
Yes. Well, that would be my choice as well, but they're shunning him. He was suggested immediately to be Republican National Chairman. I mean,
yes.
He is a master of running a campaign, and you would think he'd be the obvious choice, but apparently he got a very cold reception. The establishment of the Republican Party is the old establishment. It's a club, and you have to be from that club. Now, there are two candidates, from what I understand, now active, and one is Ronald McDaniel, who has the job now and who did not do a particularly good job. When it comes to organizing the electorate, which is the job, she really – I thought she had done a better job, but she failed. She did not understand the importance of the early voting and the
mm-hmm.
changes in the electoral system. And the other candidate is Harmeet Dillon
–
who is a, I think, a Republican National Committee woman from California.
Right.
But I think Zeldin would have made a heck of a national chairman.
But Zeldin would bring people together. That's the thing. And
yes.
would also, I think, in the House, I think he would take care of the Freedom Caucus by just, you know, getting their votes. But they still have time to make it up and put this behind them. But it's you don't want to be arguing now among yourselves when there are some very important issues like the one that I'm going to mention next year as we're running out of time, and that's the FBI and Twitter, Bill. This is more serious than I thought it was.
Horrible. Horrible. This is what dictatorship looks like.
That's right.
The idea, you know, people curse J. Edgar Hoover, and they say, well, he ended doing things he shouldn't have done. He never got the FBI into this kind of trouble.
Mm-hmm, right.
I mean, we have, and no matter what you may think of Hoover, he was a dominating figure. What the FBI needs in its leadership is a highly respected Ed Levy kind of guy who became Attorney General
yes.
in the 70s and was so respected for the work that he did. An absolutely non-political figure, not like the Attorney General of the United States, who really has shot himself in the foot. He was a respected judge, and look what he's become, just
right.
a political hack. They need an absolutely respected figure who will devote himself entirely to law enforcement and not get the FBI into these things.
Well, and hopefully, Bill, We're kind of running out of time, so I wanted to get this in. Hopefully, when there is a Republican running the – well, it's going to happen, but, I mean, when they have the committee and Jim Jordan calls Director Wray over to the FBI, I would like to know who was the person who gave the okay to the FBI to call Twitter. Because if they call Twitter, they probably call Facebook as well. Because that is completely out of their mission. They're not supposed to do stuff like that. The FBI, you know better than me, it's an organization with tremendous history, and I think most Americans like the FBI. I certainly always had high opinion of the FBI. But you got to wonder who gave this decision, what person in the chain of command, because my understanding of FBI agents, and I had known some people who were FBI agents, is that they have a very strict discipline. And they just don't call on an they don't show up in somebody's house and say, or a business, and say, hey, I'm with the FBI, I need to talk. There has to be a reason, and it has to be part of a program. So somebody gave them that project to go talk. That every day, that smells more and more terrible, Bill.
Well, it does, and there was no question that they were trying to influence the flow of information in a presidential election. And there have been surveys taken. There have been surveys taken of voters. Would you have voted differently or considered voting differently if you knew all these things about Hunter Biden? And the overwhelming number said yes. And I think we have – here is where I have to side with Trump, at least sympathetically. The election may not have been stolen in the ballot boxes, but it may have been stolen elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And that is something we have to face. This is election integrity is very important in any democracy. We don't take it seriously enough, in part because the press doesn't take it seriously enough, as long as the right people win.
That's right.
And that
is right.
That is what happens when you poison and politicize these institutions.
Right. But I think Trump, I think you would agree with me that Trump did not handle the explanation well. Had he said beginning, the way Trump reacted to it was sort of like they went down to the graveyard or to the cemetery and they dug up a bunch of votes. That's kind of the way he reacted to it, as if there had been more ballots or stuffing ballots and stuff like that. And that's, you know, that I always felt was difficult to prove, because you had to do so much proving. It's hard to do it unless it's obvious, and it wasn't. But this whole thing with high tech, that is starting to look more and more, and this is why I continue to say I would rather see DeSantis as the nominee, but Trump, the issues may be swinging in Trump's direction here in about 6 months. I mean, his stuff about the election having been tilted one way or the other may turn out to be, I mean, that story, Trump may look prophetic on the border, on the economy, and on the election integrity. And in 6 months, we may be talking about that, Bill. And Trump may look really good all of a sudden on those three issues. I understand his personality is a problem. I get that. And sometimes he shoots himself in the foot. But, man, this thing with – look, I'm beginning to think more and more that it, you know, if the election was not stolen, there was clearly an effort to help Joe Biden, Bill.
Oh, this is obvious. I mean, but you won't hear it on CNN.
You won't hear it on CNN. Yeah, no, you're right about that.
And you won't read it in the New York Times.
You're going to hear it, Bill, the next time you and I get together.
Well, that certainly we'll hear it.
Yeah,
and
we'll talk about it the next time, because I think this is one of the issues that is going to get bigger and bigger. I really do. I mean, Elon Musk, a month ago, was the darling of the left because of the electric car. He's now the evil man of the left because of Twitter, but he's done the country a big favor, if only to expose what was going on, Bill.
That's absolutely correct. And look, we are just at the beginning of the story.
Yes.
You would think a story about the 2020 election would be long past, but we're really at the beginning. But that's why, as you put it, the Republicans have to hit the ground running and get these investigations going and make them loud.
And if Joe Manchin is listening, Bill, I think Joe Manchin could do the country a big favor if somehow the Senate got involved in this investigation too. Because one of the sad things about losing the Senate is that we're not going to have these joint, you know, Senate-House investigations like they did with Watergate and Iran-Contra. And
that's right.
To me, that the country could really use one of those investigations on this so that both sides are on the table investigating, because this is bad for either party. The FBI should not be doing stuff like this. I don't care who the candidate is, Bill.
That's right. They have to be pure as soap, pure
that's
as
right.
ivory. And,
well,
and,
Caesar's wife, as they used to say, right?
Pure Caesar's wife. That's
exactly
right.
Well, Bill, I am completely out of time, but I want to thank you so much for joining us. We'll continue this conversation the next time around after Christmas. Merry Christmas to you. I hope you go out and check out the lights in New York. I understand they're pretty. And
they
I hope
are.
You have a wonderful Merry Christmas. And we'll chat again next week.
And the same to you, sir, and we will talk next week. We'll have plenty to talk about.
That's right. Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, kind of running out of time here at the end, but this topic of election integrity, this is one that we're going to pick up a lot more in the future. Merry Christmas to all of you, and we'll chat after the 25th. Bye-bye, everybody.